Welcome to section two of our episode on spotted winged Drosophila. In this section of the episode, Jake Overgaard and myself went down to Winona, Minnesota, and we visited Jim Riddle, who is the owner of Blue Fruit Farm and also a longtime organic grower in Minnesota. We talked to him about what his tactics are for dealing with spotted winged Drosophila. Let's take a listen. We're here today at Blue Fruit Farm with the owner of Blue Fruit Farm, Jim Riddle. And we're also joined today by Jake Overgaard.
Hi, guys.
Jake, what's your position?
I work for University of Minnesota Extension in Winona County.
All right. And this is Annie again. And again, I am the Extension Educator for Fruit and Vegetable Production at the University. So it's beautiful out here today. We're really happy to be out here. Thanks for having us out, Jim.
Yeah, welcome to Blue Fruit Farm. Thanks for coming.
Sure. So can you tell us a little bit more about the farm? Obviously, with the name is pretty descriptive.
Yeah. So we have about 5 acres of perennial fruit, and most of the fruit is blue. So various things like we have a lot of blueberries, of course, but also black currants, aronia berries, June berries, elderberries, plums, and a crop that is just ripening, even though it's still May, called honeyberries or hascaps. So, and they're blue as well.
And how long have you been growing?
Yeah, well, 8 years. So in 2010 is when we put in our first planting, and we staggered it over 3 years. We didn't do everything all in 1 year. So it kind of reduced the workload and stretched things out. But the whole 5 acres has an 8-foot high deer fence around it because we're in a very high deer pressure area. So we couldn't grow any of these things if we couldn't protect them from deer. So that was a starting point. And then we've learned that we created a giant 5-acre bird feeder. And so we've gone to the extreme of putting bird netting over most of the fruits, not the plum trees or aronia bushes. But the birds especially love the blueberries, the June berries, and the honeyberries. And we sell a variety of different ways. We sell locally. We have a lot of people that come directly to the farm and get 5-pound boxes of fruit. It's not a U-pick, so we don't have crowds coming here. My wife didn't really want to deal with the crowd control and the liability and people just showing up any hours, weekends, whatever. So we harvest the fruits ourselves, and we hire up to about 10 people during peak harvest season, and then sell through the food co-ops, through a grocery store distributor out of La Crosse, but then also to some restaurants and to a few craft brewers that are making various fruit beers. So a variety of different markets. And our fruit finds its way to various products at the Minnesota State Fair as well, which is fun.
Great. I've been hearing about aronia wine and lots of different jellies and jams made out of these fruits. So a lot of versatile purposes for these.
Yeah. And the fruits we grow, I mean, they're blue primarily, but they're also very flavorful and high in antioxidants, very high vitamin C content. And the elderberries have natural antiviral properties, so really good for colds and flu. And the aronia and some of the other fruits have anthocyanins, so help prevent cancer and dementia, things like that. So very healthy, but a lot of the fruits we grow are new to the American market, new to the American palate. So blueberries, I'd like to say, sell themselves. The other things are easy to grow, but we have to sell them. So we do a lot of kind of workshops or tastings just to introduce people to these new flavors.
And you work a lot with other organic growers too, right? You've been doing this for a really long time, and I'm sure you've had a lot of influence on helping other farmers in Minnesota grow organically.
Yeah, I've been in our land here has been organic since the 1970s. And our operation, Blue Fruit Farm, has been certified organic since we started in 2010. But for 20 years I worked as an organic inspector and trained inspectors all over the U.S., all over the world, but have been very involved in Minnesota and the national organic policy and education. So I currently chair the state's Organic Advisory Task Force and am always part of the Minnesota Organic Conference as well as the Moses Conference in La Crosse, and have really seen organic grow, see organic in the Quick Trip, see organic wherever you look, you'll find organic products these days. But I've always wanted to make sure that it means what it says, which is why I worked as an inspector and training people and really worked on the standards themselves, that they're rigorous and that they're enforced, because the customer that's paying for organic should be getting the authentic thing, but also the farmer who's growing organic shouldn't be competing with fraudulent products. Right. So for me, the integrity goes both ways.
Right, right. Now, so let's get over to spotted wing Drosophila.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. and Jake, you can jump in at any point here, too. So in your conversations with farmers and going to all these conferences, speaking with folks, talking to MDA, what's the mood like around spotted wing?
Well, I think it varies depending on the type of fruit you're growing, but it's certainly on everyone's radar now. It's not something we want to be dealing with, but it is a new pest and it's a major concern. Our farm, it's present later in the season, but it hasn't been to any economic threshold or any noticeable impact on yields. But we do a number of strategies to prevent the problem, and that is kind of the organic approach to begin with, is try and prevent problems. I can get into the details of that, but I think for crops like raspberries and strawberries and blackberries, I'm glad I don't grow those, but for people who do, I think it's a major concern. Those are the types of growers where I hear a major concern, and now starting to hear some in tomatoes, even in cherry tomatoes.
Yeah, too. So even cherry tomatoes have a thin enough skin that sometimes they can penetrate them, especially if those cherry tomatoes get damaged, crack.
Right.
Yeah, they get right in there.
And Jim, I think it kind of, The crops that you selected to grow, it's not just because they're blue, but they're also more resistant to insects and diseases that fit into the selection of the varieties and types of fruits that you do grow.
Right. Yeah. So, and we put all these things in before anyone in Minnesota or in this area had heard of spotted wing Drosophila. So we're pretty lucky that we didn't focus on red raspberries. but it's probably a good thing there aren't blue raspberries, or we'd probably have them. So I think part of it's just luck. But some of the things we grow ripen quite early. So I said that the honeyberries are just starting to ripen now here at the end of May. And so we'll be done harvesting them by the third week in June. And that typically has been before the spotted wing Drosophila shows up. And then Juneberries, or otherwise known as Saskatoon or Serviceberry, that's the second crop we're harvesting. And once again, those are done before spotted wing shows up. And then the black currants is the third crop, and we will find some spotted wing on late if we leave some fruit that we just missed or some that falls to the ground, and then you'll see it's really soft if you go to pick it, and that's a sign that that larva has matured inside the fruit and it's just turned the inside to juice. So it destroys it from the inside out. So we will see a little bit, but we're already done with our harvest by then. And the early blueberries, we don't have a problem. But one of the things that we also do is very thorough harvesting. So we're not letting fruit fall on the ground. And then we get things chilled right away. And I think that's another key. I serve on Dr. Mary Rogers as part of a national organic control research grant for spotted wing Drosophila, and I'm on the advisory committee and went to a meeting of that group in Atlanta a couple years ago, and they talked quite openly about their various strategies. And he says, "Yeah, we're doing all these different things, including fine mesh netting, who is another just to try and exclude them from the, from getting to the fruit." But he said, probably the most critical thing we do is chilling and cold storage of the fruit, that even if the egg has been laid, that egg can't develop or the larva can't develop around 35 degrees Fahrenheit. So they hold fruit 5 days at that temperature, and then it goes out free of any of the pests developing. And then it, of course, has better shelf life, better customer satisfaction. So that's something that we do here with most of the fruit, that we do have a walk-in cooler, and most fruit, as soon as it's been harvested, it goes into the cooler and starts chilling down. But blueberries, you often pick blueberries where it looks ripe, but when you see the stem end, it's still a little red. And if you let those sit out overnight, then they blue up, and then we chill them the next morning. So typically with blueberries, we leave them sit out just to get fully blue in color, and then pop them in the cooler for a few days before we're ready to sell them. So that's another step. It's not an agronomic step. It's something kind of post-harvest control that we do.
Would you have any advice for somebody who doesn't have a walk-in cooler?
Well, clear out your refrigerator. I mean, that's what we started with, is a big refrigerator, and took the shelving out and used that. But yeah, just thorough harvest. You still need to do that, good sanitation, but. Also, another thing we do is in our pruning is it seems that the spotted wing Drosophila really is attracted to dense foliage where they kind of congregate in the heat of the day. So we do more of an open pruning. So with the blueberries, we remove lower stems and just don't have a lot of foliage in the center of the plant. And that's intentional. We lose some productivity probably because of it, but I think it really helps prevent some of the problems too.
Yeah, that seems really important. Do you feel like spotted wing, where are they hanging out? Do you get the impression that they're might be overwintering, or do you think that they're flying in every year? I mean, the research hasn't really been
Yeah,
conclusive on that yet.
I don't know, and that's one reason I said yes to Mary Rogers to be on the team, was so I could learn some of these tricks of this bug and what they're up to. And yeah, I'd be curious.
They're still
I
teasing
know
that
those
out.
Asian beetles overwinter, those the fake
Do you grow
ladybugs.
any fruit where the skin is too thick for spotted wing to penetrate?
Yeah, we've never seen them in the aronia. Aronia has a little tougher skin, but it also has a drier flesh and is incredibly astringent. So there just may not be the sugars, or there may be some phenols in the fruit of the aronia that's a natural repellent, but we aren't seeing them in that. We aren't seeing them in plums.
And how often do you harvest? When I was talking to Mary yesterday, we talked about how frequent harvesting can help with this
Yeah,
problem.
well, in blueberries, we're harvesting at least every 2 days. But that's not the same plant. That's just we're just to keep up. And the fruit is really loaded. I mean, it's been an incredible year for moisture. And we've got really good fruit set. And so we're going to be harvesting more, much, much more fruit and much more often. Yeah, the problem is weekends, that when you hire people and you just, you can't have them work every day, and we don't like to work every day. So you take some time off, and then you go back out there, and darn, I wish I was out harvesting yesterday. And things get a little riper than, especially when this, 80, 90 degree heat.
Yeah. So what do you do when you get to that point? If it's been a few days and
Yeah.
you do start seeing SWD in your berries, what's
Well,
your next step?
yeah, it's not so much SWD that we've seen, it's more that overripe.
Yeah.
They just have gotten a little past where we would
Sure.
like them.
So you're not
And
actually encountering the
no, it's not.
body in the
It's not.
pool.
I wish we had been out there yesterday because of the spotted wing Drosophila. It's more that things just ripened up
It's more of a
faster than.
post-harvest issue.
Yeah, and those we sell for jam or beer or process ourselves. We make some jams and juices ourselves too. So those go into 5-pound bags that get a blue tag, and those we call the jam berries. So we sell those for processing at a little lower price.
Still getting some money out of them.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So speaking of the relationship between harvesting and SWD, what do you and you said you don't have a pick your own operation. But I know there are a lot of berry growers in Minnesota who either have pick your own or are considering that. How would the SWD situation be different for somebody with a pick your own?
Well, that would be one of my worries is, you know, the people that come and pick, you're not watching everything they do. And they're always going to pick the easy, the best, the biggest, and keep moving. You know, they're wanting to fill their buckets. And so they're going to leave more fruit. There might, you know, drop fruit. They might damage the plants. That's one of Joyce's big concerns and reasons we don't do it, is we put too much work into the plants, and she doesn't want people accidentally, you know, breaking branches or something. But still, for the spotted wing Drosophila, I think you could have more problems unless you're really managing where people pick, and then you've got a cleanup crew that comes in after people of your own pickers. Because pick your own, people are not going to be as thorough as you need to be to help prevent this pest.
And I would imagine maybe it would be difficult during the week when you might not be getting as many people out there
Right, yeah,
when
you got flushes of people, you know, good weather days and bad weather days and weekends, people come and, you know,
Yeah,
right.
you might be picking more than you would have wanted in a U-pick situation.
Right. It's
Yeah.
just harder to manage that
Right.
harvest.
In the past few years, do you get an impression of how much impact this pest has actually had on organic growers in Minnesota?
Yeah, I don't have a good answer for that. I know it's a concern. The sessions that I've attended, that Mary and others have put on, are well attended. People are worried, but I'm not hearing yet a lot of kind of economic reports. But that doesn't mean it's not happening. I haven't heard a lot about that.
Okay. Do you have an idea of how many people have actually tried exclusion?
I think it's been very rare. I think it's
Okay.
more like in British Columbia or the Pacific Northwest, where there's some really large berry producers that are doing the netting for insects, not just birds and hail. There's hail netting, there's bird netting, and then there's insect exclusion.
Which are, of course, all different
Right,
kinds of netting
and
that you
different
have to
support
worry about.
structures, and yeah.
Yeah, I would imagine that training people to put up netting for insect exclusion, that's not trivial.
No.
And it takes a lot of input cost.
And then you have high winds, which we've, you know, these are big sails that you've put up that are, you know, a lot of resistance. Even the netting we have is a pretty, you know, lets a lot of air through, and it still really pulls on the wires and the posts. And I would think that the hail netting would be worse, and the insect netting would be even worse. So, and you don't want to have it up there during pollination, so you've really got to manage the timing. The one thing with our bird netting that I really feel bad about is dragonflies and butterflies that get caught in it. And, you know, we've done a lot to encourage biodiversity here at our farm. We've got native prairie all around us, and woods on one side and prairie on three sides. And then we grow various native plants ourselves. And we have tremendous populations of native pollinators. So the bumblebees, a number of variety of species of bumblebees, but miniature tiny little bees and all sorts of pollinators. So I think we've got a very healthy ecology here. And I do think that that's helping with the spotted wing Drosophila, just even though it's an introduced pest. It seems that there's some research showing some native mites are impacting them. But I would think some of the other, if you've got a healthy ecosystem, it's going to help keep even an introduced pest like this in check. That there's going to be the generalist predators that are going to eat anything they can, really. Mm-hmm. So that's another reason I wanted to be part of that research group, is to learn, either about impacts of natural predators, natural occurring diseases, but whether there are any introduced predators or disease organisms that, in their native countries, the spotted winged Drosophila is just part of the ecosystem, and it doesn't, reap the kind of disaster that it seems like it can here. So it's just a matter of catching up and getting some of the natural controls in place. And I think that's a work in progress still. There have been some things identified that I've heard about, but you have to be really careful when you're introducing something else new that it doesn't become a problem. Mm-hmm. So there's quarantines and testing and all that that goes on before it can be introduced or released or sold as a commercial product.
Okay.
But yeah, we've been lucky that we haven't had to spray any kind of insecticide, the spinosad or pyganic or any of the approved ones. Mm-hmm. I really try and minimize the sprays we use and focus on, disease-resistant plant varieties or things that just are naturally vigorous and don't have a lot of pest and disease problems. And build the vigor of the plant first, and a healthy plant is going to have a lot less susceptibility to both disease and insect pressure, and that's what we found here on our farm.
Okay, so you'd say those are your top, recommendations, or the top things, at least, that work for you on your farm.
Right. So, having things that ripen before the spotted winged Drosophila gets here, that's mm-hmm. one advantage, and then some things that have some natural resistance to other pests and disease that may carry over, but also the pruning regime we talked about, and then thorough harvest and post-harvest chilling of the fruit, I think, are some of the keys.
All right, great. For us. It's going to be interesting, I think, to see how this pest changes strawberry production and raspberry production in the state, especially in our organic farms.
Right.
And farms that just don't want to use pesticides for these insects.
I think it's going to be really hard to grow raspberries outdoors in the open.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I think you're right, Jake.
If you're organic. Just the sprays aren't that effective. And, unless you can figure out a good regime or a good way to use your netting. But then, like what you're saying, you're eliminating that habitat where you're hoping that your beneficials are going to spend time and other insects on your farm.
Right. I know.
There's an ecosystem impact, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Totally. And we see that with our bird netting, we are excluding raptors.
Yeah.
And so then the vole population just explodes because there's nothing hunting them from.
Yeah. You plug one hole in.
Right. Exactly. Right.
All right. Well, thanks. I really appreciate your time and your words of wisdom on SWD and everything else.
Well, yeah, good luck. I just, for the people that are growing those, raspberries especially. Yeah, I
have challenges ahead.
Right. But the thing I hate is when I pop a raspberry in my mouth and it had a Asian beetle on it that I didn't see because they blend in.
Yeah, that's a little less pleasant than a little larva.
Yeah, right.
I was on a bike ride once and I had an Asian beetle fly in my mouth. And like, my mouth is never going to be clean again.
I know. It's terrible. Yeah, I hate that.
Gross.
Do you want us to include that part on the podcast?
Sure.
All right. Sounds good, because we're still recording. All right. With that, thank you, Jim.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming down. Yeah, good to have you here.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. At this point, you might still be wondering, does spotted winged Drosophila overwinter, or is it migrating up every year? Might also be wondering which fruits are most susceptible and what are some fruits that we might be able to grow a little easier without having to worry about spotted wing. For answers to those questions and more, stay tuned to the next episode where I interview Bill Hutchinson.